Hello, and welcome back to Even More News, the first and only, you guessed it, news podcast. My name's Katie Stoll.
Hi, Katie Stoll. My name's Cody Johnston.
Hey, Cody Johnston.
Oh, wow.
Okay, well, this is the point where we normally wish you a very happy holiday. But today, when we are recording, it is September 11th. Which is a national day of remembrance. So, a national day of remembrance to you, Cody.
National day of remembrance to you, too.
It's also National Make Your Bed Day, which honestly, I think, can be moved to another day. Because if there's a day that you don't need to make your bed, it's today, I'd say.
I would say that if there's a day to make your bed, it's today.
To, like, not let the terrorists win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you gotta get out of bed. You gotta make your bed.
I didn't like making that joke just now.
That's okay. Also, congratulations to the war.
The war for being old enough to vote.
Turning 18.
Turning 18. Yeah, it's wild.
One might say America's made its bed and must lie in it.
The war's
forever.
The war's been going on 18 years. Mm-hmm. How old were we when this happened? 17.
17 or 18, probably.
Yeah. So, yeah. As long as I was alive when it happened.
Yeah.
Very cool. I just wanted to share little tidbit. Apparently, every year on the anniversary of 9/11, there are these two giant beams of light projected into the sky. No. From Lower Manhattan, actually. Mm-hmm. Not Ted Cruz's dick, is mm-hmm. what you were saying? Mm-hmm. No. Not from his dick. That's a different light.
But it is every year on 9/11.
Every year on 9/11, something does project from his dick.
Okay.
And it's a surprise to him. Mm-hmm, always. Yeah. He always forgets that it's going to happen. And it's like, whoa! Uh-huh. Anyway, more on point. Okay, no, the two beams of light are projected from Lower Manhattan as a beautiful tribute to all the lives that were lost. However, according to the New York Times, this specific tribute endangers around 160,000 birds every year. Apparently, the birds are drawn to the lights and they're drawn off course from their migratory patterns. Mm. And it leaves them exhausted and tired and injured. And it's just a really distressful, awful thing that happens. And apparently, when they're down there tonight, they'll estimate when there's like 1,000 birds up there, they will turn off the lights to
give them a break.
To give them a break. Yeah. Or give them time to escape.
Oh, God.
That's literally what it says. The lights are switched off for 20 minutes to give them a chance to escape.
A chance to escape. Mm-hmm. That's pretty intense.
It's pretty intense.
But also, I mean, they're birds. They're losers.
Yeah,
Their chance when they were dinosaurs, and they lost.
And they lost. So,
here we are.
Survival of the fittest, mm-hmm. in effect. And speaking of lessons, special thanks to Skillshare for supporting Even More News, whose listeners get 2 months of unlimited access to over 25,000 classes for free.
To sign up, go to Skillshare.com/news.
Worst year ever. The trailer launches next week.
Wow.
So we'll be tweeting about that. We'll be sharing that.
You should
subscribe.
Yeah.
And then once the trailer launches, shortly thereafter, the first episode.
Yeah.
And boy, we'll have our hands full.
Ooh,
boy, will we.
Wowee. Yeah. That's going to be something.
That's going to be something else. Also, the third Democratic presidential primary debate between the 10, that's right, 10 remaining candidates will take place on Thursday, September 12th, which is the day that this episode is being released. Mm-hmm. So tonight, if you're listening today, it's going to be held at the Texas Southern University in Houston. ABC News will host, and it will take place from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But we, as you can tell, are recording our podcast today. On 9/11. So we will not be doing a post-debate podcast this time. We are sorry. We're busy. We're going to be recording Worst Year Ever tomorrow.
We'll talk about it.
And we will talk about it. It'll just be a few days later.
Yeah, won't be here. Yeah. We'll be here and now.
We will save our hot takes for several days after. Actually, about a week after.
Yeah, they'll be slightly cooled.
So they'll be cooled. But that means that they'll be methodical.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's true. Yeah,
not just slapdash.
Right. You have the hot take and it melts and it's got, it's boiling over. And then
you freeze
it. And then you freeze it. And it's taken its final form and shape.
And it's got solid edges.
Exactly.
And that's what you can expect.
Planned out. It's sculpted.
You can expect that from us in our coverage of the third Democratic debate. Cool.
24 days after it airs.
Okay. I guess that's enough preamble. Shall we get into the meat and the potatoes? I don't eat meat, but Neither do you, actually.
Yeah.
Shall we get into the potatoes of the week?
Yeah, I guess if we have to get into the potatoes, we'll get into the potatoes.
Let's talk about this hot potato, Ronan Farrow.
Ooh.
Ayo. He's a cutie.
Love when he pops up.
Love when you're like,
hey, by the way, yeah, I got it.
You're like, oh, he's got something. And he pops up. You're like, oh, this will be good. And it was.
He calls you. Just be like, oh, no. Why is Ronan Farrow calling me?
Definitely screen those calls. Yeah. Okay. So Ronan Farrow back with a new bombshell. According to his piece in The New Yorker, the MIT Media Lab accepted many extremely large donations from Jeffrey Epstein, even after his child sex scandals had come to light. And Jeff had been sent to, you know, quote, prison.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, if you can really call what he experienced prison.
Yeah, it's nice.
The
building.
First time around,
his
anyway.
Nice building, yeah.
His nice building that he got to leave for 12 hours a day. So they accepted those donations and then they lied about it many times because they knew it was yucky.
Oh, because they knew it was yucky.
They knew. And also a violation of their donation rules.
Sure.
So,
aside from it being yucky, it's against
it
the
was
rules.
Also against the rules. Yeah, so Epstein had been disqualified from donating to MIT, but went around that by donating anonymously, but with the full knowledge and assistance of the Media Lab. You know, they all concealed his donations. In fact, the effort to conceal the lab's contact with Epstein was so widely well known that I guess that the staff of the lab's director referred to Epstein as Voldemort or he who must not be named. This is a direct quote from the article. Thanks, Ronan. It's also fitting.
Yeah, that's corny and fitting.
Oh, I thought you were going to have a very different reaction to that.
I mean,
it's also a sucks because everyone's like, yeah, he who must not be named. Everybody knows just how awful this is.
Well, right. Like, yeah, he who must not be named. Just say the billionaire pedophile that you're accepting money from when you know it's.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I disappointed you in my reaction.
Okay. It just wasn't what I was expecting. I was like, ooh, this will be a good one.
I mean, it speaks to that they knew and
yeah,
they
it
know
does.
And it sucks.
It does suck.
Yeah.
Whole thing sucks. The article also details how Epstein acted as an intermediary between other wealthy donors, such as Bill Gates, philanthropist Bill Gates. The spokesperson for Gates said that the allegations are false, that you know that Epstein funneled the money in, but
yeah.
You know,
all allegations are false, Katie.
All allegations mm-hmm. are false. They are not true.
Yeah.
That's inherent in the word. You can't spell allegation without including the word false.
Yeah, you can't. It's there A-L-F-A-L.
Yeah, you got there.
Allegation S-E, right? I did it?
Yeah, you did
yeah,
it.
Okay.
Everybody understands. We're all on the same page mm-hmm. here. Also, according to their website, their targeted diversity efforts have also enriched the culture of the lab, creating supportive spaces for women and students of color and opening new lines of discussion throughout our community. This place is home to all sorts of different projects. You know, some of them are fronted by leaders of the Me Too movement. Other projects are focused on social justice and the inclusion of marginalized individuals. So you have to think that this known secret full of these different types of people must have been a really toxic environment for them to know that the sex trafficker, this pedophile mm-hmm. is like getting away with his crimes out in public and allowed to, you know, be a part of their research lab. A lot of people resigned and stuff throughout this experience.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah, good for them.
I mean, it's a bummer that they have to.
Yeah, it's a real bummer.
The billionaire pedophile pushed them out.
Anyway, since this story broke, the director of the Media Lab, Joichi Joy Ito, has resigned. And they are launching a full-scale investigation. So I guess that's something. But again, they knew what was happening at the time. Right. I don't even know what you need to investigate specifically. In fact, a guy named Nicholas Negroponte, the co-founder of Media Lab, said that if they were to rewind the clock based on what they knew at the time, he would still take the money and encourage Ito to take the money as well. So that's fun.
Yeah.
Talk about, I love it when people learn their lessons and, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, you got to get that money.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of many, many examples of this thing, specifically with Epstein, like everyone knew about it.
Right.
For years after everybody knew about it and still associated with him, still a lot of photos out there of people with him palling around, having a good time with the known pedophile and sex trafficker. And
so, you know, I think there's a lot of bad people that don't care.
Yeah. But it's also, I think it's heartening, actually, to know that Ronan Farrow specifically is now on the Epstein beat.
Oh, sure, yeah.
He's very good, very thorough. knowing that he's out there on this particular case is, I would say, good.
It's a ray of light. It's a beam of light shooting out of lower Manhattan and endangering pedophiles, not birds.
Not birds, and not Ted Cruz.
And not Ted Cruz. Well, yeah.
Maybe one day. Maybe one day Ronan Farrow will endanger Ted Cruz. Who knows?
We can only hope.
Yeah.
All right. Let's give a little hurricane update. So after Dorian was downgraded to a post-tropical storm, he made landfall in Nova Scotia, did quite a bit of damage to the power grid, apparently leaving 400,000 people without power. Well, it's a he, right?
Yeah,
Dorian
yeah.
is a male name, I think. Anyway, that should all be fixed by today, but that isn't actually the update that I really wanted to talk about. I want to talk about what is continuing to happen in the Bahamas. Y'all, they're in very bad shape. About 70,000 people are now without homes, which is about 17% of the population. The infrastructure damage is making the aid and recovery process much more difficult. And we still don't know what the death toll will be. There's a lot of stuff going. There's whispers of it being up in the thousands. Like, they're continuing to discover bodies. They'll overturn something. And there was this one story of a father clutching his son that they found. And the government has been accused of not releasing the official death count, but they're denying that. Regardless, this Tales will continue time. To change.
Sounds familiar.
And one of the most heartbreaking developments is the U.S. reaction, because refugees are attempting to come to the United States, you know, for safety, and they were supposed to be welcome. But ICE and border agents are actively turning them away for not having visas, despite the fact that only passports and documents saying that they have not been arrested are supposedly, that's what all that was supposed to be required of them. It's mind
boggling. So they're making it harder and harder and harder, like they've been doing.
Yes, yes, that's exactly right. In a press conference on Monday, Trump took time away from ranting about Alabama to say, quote, "The Bahamas has some tremendous problems with people going to the Bahamas that weren't supposed to be there. I don't want to allow people that weren't supposed to be in the Bahamas to come into the United States, including some very bad people and some very bad gang members and some very, very bad drug dealers." What does this sound like to you, Cody?
It sounds like our president. It sounds like the very first thing he said when he said he wanted to be the president.
Yeah.
Sounds exactly like maybe...
sounds like he could be talking about Mexico and our border.
Maybe he's talking about Mexico and our border. Maybe there's like something about certain people.
People of color?
Maybe.
It's hard to put my finger on it, but it smells like racism.
Maybe like, yeah, certain people that he feels really compelled consistently to frame like rapists mm-hmm. and murderers and drug dealers.
Very, very bad people.
That's like, and it's not surprising. It's messed up. I hate the way he talks.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, because I really love it.
But that's how we differ. Very bad people and some very bad gang members and some very, very bad drug dealers. It's just like, it's just so silly.
Yeah, the gang members were bad, but the drug dealers were very, very bad.
Yeah, often the way he talks sort of masks how horrific it also is.
Yeah.
Because it's silly. He sounds silly when he says some stuff, but also it's terrible.
Let's circle back to Alabama for a second, because apparently Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross threatened to fire NOAA officials after employees at the agency in the Birmingham office contradicted President Trump's very, very false claim that Alabama would be hit by Hurricane Dorian. Just let that sink in for a second. They threatened to fire these government employees if they didn't back up the president on his lie. He also apparently encouraged them to publicly disavow weather forecasters' positions that Alabama was not at risk. It's pretty fashy.
Kind of exactly what I was just saying, because it's very silly. This whole situation is very
silly. That's terrifying. That's more scary than silly to me.
It's both. We've been focusing so much on this weird, bizarre story, because it ultimately doesn't matter.
This shit matters.
It does. Like, the Alabama thing in general doesn't. Like, the fact that we've spent a week and a half talking about is silly because...
Yeah.
Like, if you...
I agree with you completely.
Yeah, you just say, like, okay, yeah, he said this dumb thing about Alabama, and then he focused on it for a week and a half.
I have so much resentment. I have so much resentment. Like, yes, we're talking about it, and here we are talking about it, but he wouldn't let it go.
Well, one of the weirdest things to me about this whole thing, we're talking about the reaction and his lie and his doubling down and the back and forth and all that. It's weird that we've skipped over the part where it's apparently become normalized that the president tweets out weather updates.
Right.
We shouldn't go to the president for weather updates. The fact that we're like, oh yeah, the president tweeted that Alabama was going to hit by a hurricane and it wasn't. Why was he tweeting out that in the first place? We don't need that information from the president specifically.
Right.
That's weird. And we've sort of breezed past that. But it's such a silly thing, but it's messed up. The firing of these people, the threatening of firing them, making them lie for him. That also helps this sort of normalization of that, like you were saying, the fashy aspect of it. He's doing it about a silly thing now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary and weird and it's bad.
Yeah.
But it normalizes it more because it is so silly. Because it's this like, oh, this is the Alabama lie. Oh my God, let it go, Mr. Trump. Let it go. It's so silly. But he was going to fire these people. And
yeah.
He wanted them, you know, like that's very messed up. And then you have another example that's maybe a little less silly, but it's been normalized to the point where like, oh, that's how it is now. That's what they do. And it's just bad.
It is bad.
He's very good at that sort of normalization because he's a silly man.
Mm-hmm.
He's a clown, but he's a dangerous clown and he has these authoritarian tendencies. So when he does the authoritarianism about a silly thing, it's easy to let it happen and let it wash over us, leading us to the more severe things.
I'm terrified of clowns.
Oh, really?
Especially silly
any,
presidential.
Any
well, that clown, president.
Are you terrified of the Joker movie?
I am. I will be scared of the Joker movie. Looks good, though.
Because the thing is, the joke is society.
Okay, we're going to elegantly transition into our ad break right now. And then when we come back, we'll have, you guessed it, even more news.
Speaking of not wanting to bother, actually, with an elegant transition, take some time to diversify your mind with Skillshare, an online learning community with thousands of classes covering dozens of topics,
whoa,
both creative and entrepreneurial. Unfortunately, I can't think of examples.
Hey, that's okay. I can.
Prove it.
Okay. Photography, writing, animation, productivity.
Powerful examples from a powerful figure. Yes, whether it's something upon which you would like to improve or something out which you've always wanted to try, you can learn it at Skillshare and continue learning throughout your life thanks to the power of listening, looking, reading, and clicking.
Skillshare, which is, and I can't stress this enough, easy to use, easy to, and I can't stress this enough, compliment, and easy to, and I can't stress this enough, read an ad about. Oh, and wowee, it's also easy to join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for our listeners. Get 2 months of Skillshare for free.
I couldn't agree more.
I could.
Okay.
I could.
Do it.
I agree so much.
Perfect. Skillshare is offering Even More News listeners 2 months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. To sign up, go to skillshare.com/news. If you need me to repeat it, go to skillshare.com/news to start your 2 months now. If you don't need me to repeat it, your needs are not my needs. So skillshare.com/news.
And we're back, as promised, for Even More News.
Keep our promises.
We keep our promises at Even More News. Dang it. Taliban peace talks. Cool. We're going to talk about that. As we've already mentioned, we're recording this on the 18th anniversary of 9/11. But now we have to talk about the fact that up until earlier this week, President Donald J. Trump was planning to remember the tragedy by holding peace talks with Taliban leaders at Camp David. Getting the U.S. out of Afghanistan is obviously a very important thing. It's a good thing. But the optics of having this meeting on U.S. soils on the anniversary of the biggest terror attack to ever occur on Americans in America is pretty surprising, I'd say. You know, especially after Republicans so recently tried to block the 9/11 first responders bill.
I have a different opinion about
you
this.
You do, please.
No, I mean, yeah, the Republicans and the first responders bill. Sure. I don't. If we're gonna end the war, good. I don't see
I don't see why that has to happen on 9/11.
Well, so the optics, I don't know. So like, let's say they have this peace talk on 9/11, and they come to an agreement. And this is more. If it were not Donald Trump, who I don't think even was planning this meeting or like talking about it correctly and honest about it anyway. But like, let's say they have this meeting and on 9/11, he's like, by the way, we're getting out of Afghanistan. I don't know. That's like a good anniversary gift, right?
Yeah.
The war is over.
I just very much understand the lack of sensitivity to having this specifically on 9/11. I'm not saying that peace talks or finding an end to this is a bad thing. I will say when this comes from our we have a new research assistant, Margaret. Hi, Margaret. But our research assistant knows a lot about this. And, you know, and she mentioned that this agreement that was to be reached was already a pretty bad one to begin with, mostly because it was made between the U.S. and the Taliban with little to no input from the Afghan government, you know, which a lot of people apparently think would be a really bad idea and lead to even more civil war because they weren't involved, you know. And yeah, she also said it might be worth mentioning that, you know,
we invented the Taliban.
That we invented the Taliban, yeah. Which she was right. I was like, good point. So, you know, there are issues with the agreement. Also, yeah, Donald Trump, is he the person that...
right. Well, there's
the elephant loose in the hospital or whatever that John Mulaney joke is.
Yeah, and there have been reports that, like, this wasn't even a planned meeting. Like, it wasn't even real. And he just tweeted it out.
But anyway, whatever... was canceled after a bombing in Kabul killed one U.S. service member, 11 others, and injured more than 100 people. So, you know, that's done.
Also,
then
Pompeo went on TV the next day after this tweet to be like, oh, yeah, we're the battle's still raging on. We killed 1,000 of them.
Right.
Like 2 days ago or whatever.
It's so like, what is all actually right. happening? It's been a very confusing situation.
We canceled it because they killed one of our service members while we were killing thousands of them.
Okay.
All right, man.
And then on Tuesday, the bombshell news broke that our very own Mr. Mustache, John Bolton, was leaving his position as the National Security Advisor. Per usual, there was a lot of back and forth about whether or not he was fired or if he left voluntarily. You know, Trump claims that he was fired. Bolton claims he resigned. Trump tweeted about it. Bolton went on TV. Honestly, though, who cares? John Bolton sucks.
Yes, he does. It's very funny, though. I think this always happens every time. And it's like, why would you agree to work for this man?
I know.
John Bolton sucks. And it's hilarious that it seems like he was hired just so Trump could shit on him. Because like there are all these quotes of them in meetings. And every once in a while, Trump would turn to him and be like, you just want to nuke him, don't you? And like, oh, yeah, we're going to like do another war, huh, John? And like he just like poked at him constantly about how he wants to do wars.
Yeah. Why did he hire this guy?
Why did he hire this guy?
Everybody's known who John Bolton is and what he wants. I just think it's interesting. I want to take a moment to have a conversation about the online conversation. Mm. You know, how everybody is like, oh, great. Another one gone. And, you know, and the chaos of the war. I'm like, yeah, sure. That wasn't being dampened by John Bolton being there. Right. Would you rather John Bolton was our national security advisor? Pick a side here, guys. Mm-hmm. Like a week ago, you were complaining about John Bolton, you know, being it who he is. And now you're upset that he's leaving. I get it. It's chaotic.
It's just it's more like the civility optics politics and like talk like, oh, yeah, the chaos, like this is not normal. We're in such a chaotic times. We got to keep the administration together. What? Why? It sucks. They're all bad. What are you talking about?
Right.
And like maybe an argument can be made that like if he's got somebody in there that's more aligned with his policies, he'd do more. But like, I don't know if he's shitting on John Bolton for wanting to do wars. Like, that's not bad.
Yeah. Like that's follow those instincts.
But also Trump wants to do wars. Let's not
Trump
kid ourselves.
Trump wants to do wars.
Also, real quick, just about the Taliban thing. There's an old tweet of his complaining about Obama meeting with the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
And he also implies that he thinks that the Taliban did 9/11,
mm-hmm.
which they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a little alarming that the president thinks that the Taliban did 9/11.
I know.
Instead of harbored Osama bin Laden and didn't agree to release him because they asked for evidence that he did it. And
right.
he said, we're not going to do that. We're just going to do a war at you.
That's a pretty succinct description of what happened.
That's pretty much what happened. We were like, give us. And they were like, ah, prove it. And we were like, fine, we'll do a war for 18 years.
Yeah, oh, I'll prove it.
Yeah.
Watch me prove it.
Yeah, they proved
for
it.
For a long time, I'm going to prove it. Yeah. I'm going to put it in the proving drawer and watch that bread rise, baby. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a great British baking show joke.
Nice.
What?
Then we killed him and threw him in the ocean.
That's exactly what happened. Anyway, it's unclear what specifically sparked Bolton's departure. Trump claims it wasn't any one thing. You know?
It was definitely him saying he wanted to resign. Like, it's the night before he was like, I want to resign. And Trump said, we'll talk about it tomorrow. And then he tweeted that he was fired. Like, that's why.
That's why. Although Tucker Carlson definitely had a hand in sowing any, you know, discord between Bolton and Donald Trump. He's
a proud boy.
He apparently privately had told Trump to ignore Bolton on Iran before, and I guess last night he was just celebrating his departure. He's saying that, Bolton leaving was great news for America. And honestly, I agree. It's the first time I've agreed with Tucker.
Yeah, it's probably not. He sometimes dips into this kind of rhetoric, bringing in a little bit, Tucker.
Oh, sure.
You know, like, oh, yeah, war's bad, by the way. But anyway,
listen,
we kick out all the Browns.
I'm not saying that I agreed with everything you said. I said just that those four words, great news for America. I agree.
Yes.
Not in the way that you think, though, probably.
Well, maybe. I know, like, a lot of people were pointing out, like, obviously, John Bolton's not a man of the left. Just earlier this year, he and Tucker spoke at the same conservative conference. I believe it was the National Conservative Conference, which sort of echoes Tucker's request recently of a political party that is a nationalist party but socially conservative. I wonder what that means, Tucker. Describe what that is. But anyway, so like he's always had a problem with John Bolton.
Yes.
He called him like what was a bureaucratic tapeworm, I believe is the phrase that he used earlier this year, I think. So he's always sort of wanted to get John Bolton out because he wants to do wars.
Yeah.
And Tucker generally seems to be anti-war, which, again, is a good thing to be. It's this insidious framing. He does this all the time. He'll, like, sneak in, like, this, like, sort of left-leaning talking point or, like, some sort of economically nationalist idea and then try to flip it around and frame it dishonestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this idea that he's a man of the left, he actually called him a progressive. He's one of the most, he said he's one of the most progressive people in the White House.
Yeah. It's wild.
And because, according to Tucker, John Bolton hasn't found any human problem that couldn't be solved by the strong arm of the government, which, A, you're only referring to war. You're only, like, the only thing John Bolton wants the government to do is do wars. But also, like, the government doing something isn't leftist. That's not, like, what that word means.
Right.
He always frames it as, like, this, like, tendency towards authoritarianism is, like, the leftist thing. Like, oh, the government does a thing, therefore it's leftist. Well, no, like, the police aren't
the
leftist.
Government does a lot of stuff.
The military isn't, like, a leftist thing. Like, that's nonsense.
Are taxes leftist?
Like, he look at a political compass. That's not what it means. He's framing it dishonestly.
Yes.
On purpose. Because he's a
because we know. We know. We understand. We get it.
It's just very frustrating to see him say that.
Of course it is.
And then people lap it up and move on. And
speaking of all of that, why don't we talk about this Trump socialism story that you sent me?
Yeah.
You can set this baby up.
As we all know, the Republican Party in general has been framing the Democrats as all socialists.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch McConnell, I believe, has frequently discussed the socialist agenda of the Democratic Party.
And how Joe Biden is a socialist.
Yes. No matter who wins, Joe Biden, we will stop the socialist menace, mm-hmm. and so on. And it's becoming more and more prominent, and it's very insidious, and it reeks of it's got a bit of a fashy vibe. It's really fun for everybody.
So many fashy vibes floating about.
So many fashy vibes from the conservative party of America. And so you have this line of attack, and they're very confident, you know, like, we're just going to basically frame them all as socialists, and we're the freedom party. And apparently Donald Trump isn't so sure that's an effective line of attack.
Really?
He's privately disclosed to some donors and aides that he just doesn't think it's going to be that easy to beat that line of ideas.
That populist idea. Yeah.
Because socialism is a very popular idea. It's a very popular idea. Universal healthcare, pretty popular idea.
Pretty popular.
And so he is sort of pushing back on the Republican consensus, mm-hmm. that, like, where everything is the socialism and socialism is bad. He knows that it's actually not. And he doesn't think it's actually going to be easy to do that. And I've been saying for many years, actually, probably at this point.
At this point, yeah.
Because he's flirted with the University of Healthcare in the past. He wrote about it in a book many years ago. He said during the 2016 campaign that everyone would have great healthcare and so on. Obviously, he dropped it because the Republican Party sort of took over. And this again speaks to sort of like.
Well, he's opportunistic.
He's very opportunistic.
And so he sees something that's popular and he wants it for himself.
Yes, he's ideologically inconsistent. He's an opportunist. And he has sort of had this sort of uneasy alliance with these conservative elites, who are all vying for power. I'm describing sort of how fascists come to power.
I understand.
Yes. Okay. Just making sure. And so I've said in the past that he's going to do this. And I think this makes it even more clear. He knows that socialism is a popular idea, generally like economically populist left ideas are winnable. You can win with those arguments. And he knows that. And I think that in the coming months, not this year, I think next year when the general starts and we have like Bernie or Warren leading the ticket, he will hop on board with the universal healthcare.
Yeah, that's an interesting prediction.
Like he's flirted for so long. Like earlier, he said, I'm not just a patriot. I'm not the doctrine of patriotism. I'm actually, we're not allowed to say it. He flirted with the idea of calling himself a nationalist for a long time. And then he finally dropped it. It's like, you know, I'm going to say it. I'm a nationalist.
Right.
And that sort of
And then
happened.
It's going to lead to a nationalist socialist.
Right. Like, I don't think he'll be that on the nose, but he'll be like, you know, hey, folks, all Americans need health care. All Americans need it. We're socialism is bad, but we're social nationalists.
Yes, exactly. That's what I mean. You'll create something that steps around that he can brand as his own and take and promise the idea of this thing to people, but just use it to consolidate his power.
Yes, he will reframe the idea using his fun little words that he tries to use. And he'll promise this a similar thing because he's an opportunist, and it's just gonna be very bad. I don't look forward to that. The thing with people like him and like the Republican Party, because if he says it and he's the president, they'll have to fall in line, and Republicans fall in line very easily because they crave a strong man. They need that authority and that power.
They're little babies.
They're little baby boys, and so they will fall in line when he decides to do that. But people like him and them. When they say something like that, it's universal healthcare that's exclusionary. It's exclusionary to people with disabilities. Exclusionary to marginalized communities.
It's universal. It's universal-ish.
It's universal-ish for quote real Americans.
For real Americans, exactly.
And so, not only is it dangerous because he doesn't really mean it, and he's going to use it as an opportunity to con people again. But if they go through with it, it will also be bad because it will be the National Socialist version.
Yeah, it won't be the thing that we need.
Yeah. Anyway, I've been saying this for months and months and months and years, and this piece dropped that really indicates like, he knows.
Watch this space, as Rachel Maddow would say.
Oh, God. All right.
Okay, we're in the news dump section of our program. You know, just wanted to say I'm sorry to everybody, but the Jeremy Renner app is no longer a thing. It's gone. It's done. It's canceled. I'm so sorry for your loss, Cody, for all of our losses.
I just don't even know what to say.
I know. We're just going to have to connect with him via Twitter.
No.
And Instagram. This is from Jeremy's words himself. This is from Jeremy's words himself, Cody.
Oh, well.
I speak sentences well.
Jeremy's words himself. Did he post these words himself on the Jeremy Renner app?
Not on the Jeremy Renner app.
Then I don't care.
Because the app doesn't exist anymore.
Well, then anyway, I don't care what he has to say anymore.
If you guys missed this story, I don't know how you could have, but actually, I easily know how you could have. Who cares about
Jeremy
this
Renner
story? Apparently, but if you've seen it in your periphery, you're like, what is that? I guess he partnered with some company to make an app that would allow him to interact with his fans directly. Super weird. Are there even that many Jeremy Renner fans? There are.
There's one less now.
There's one less. And then, I guess, a Reddit Deadspin checked out the app and was like, oh, weird. The way this notifications were structured made it seem like Jeremy was replying to everybody, and then trolls overran it, and it just became a typical cluster.
Yeah, a silly idea for a social media site mm-hmm. will ultimately attract that kind of behavior.
I think any social media site will yes. ultimately attract that kind of behavior. Also, Jeremy's wife left him this week, so rough patch, bro.
Oh, shoot.
You know, that isn't something that I guess is any of our business, but I shared it.
Yeah, now we all know.
And finally, just gotta say, things are crazy in Britain. A little too crazy to do justice right now in this section of the program. But briefly, last Friday, the House of Lords voted to make a no-deal Brexit illegal. This is bad news for Boris, which, by the way, is the title of his eventual autobiographical children's book that he will write when he loses his job.
I would read Bad News for Boris.
Bad News for Boris is perfect, right? Anyway, bad news for Boris because he'd previously claimed that the UK would definitely be leaving the EU, deal or no deal. So stuff is developing.
Good luck, Boris.
Good luck, Boris. Also, John Bercow, the iconic current Speaker of the Commons, is going to resign effective October 31st. We're all going to miss.
Or as they would say, 31 October.
31 October? Mm-hmm. That what was that? Yeah. 31 October? That's my British accent.
Is it?
There's going to be an election in Parliament for a new speaker, but like I said, miss this guy yeah. very much. And in honor of our his fate. Departure, we're going to play some quick clips of him being very, very entertaining.
Order! 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 Mr. Lewis, get a grip of yourself, man. Calm. Take up yoga, you'll find it beneficial, man. I say to member, order! Resume your seat, Mr. Harper. You don't stand when I'm standing, and that's the end of it. Mr. Angus Brendan McNeil, calm yourself. You may be a cheeky chappy, but you're also an exceptionally noisy one.
You just wanted to say... You just wanted to play the cheeky chappy part.
Of course I wanted to play the cheeky chappy. It's amazing. We need a John Bercow in our government. We need that in Congress.
You don't think Nancy Pelosi is up to the task of...
Nancy Pelosi has never called someone a cheeky chappy.
Well, you should write a letter to her.
Everybody... Write Nancy Pelosi and say, be a cheeky, tell her.
We need you to be leader.
Well, okay. I need her to be a cheeky chappy.
Yeah. You know, she needs to be a cheeky
chappy. She needs to be a cheeky chappy.
And impeach the president.
And impeach the president. Yeah. I mean, yeah, probably, definitely. Mm. All right, guys. That's
she
it.
She is appalled. It is chaos in the White House. And we cannot have this.
We cannot have this. We cannot have John Bolton, but we cannot have this either.
Nancy, it's okay that John Bolton's leaving the White House.
Maybe she is kind of a cheeky chappy.
I don't think so.
No. All right, guys. That's it for us today.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know.
I do.
We reached the end of our outline.
Yeah.
We're done.
Yeah.
Speaking words.
Yeah, just a couple of cheeky chappies being
done. A couple
of
cheeky chappies going to be noisy ones off mic.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rough ending to this podcast.
I thought it was perfect.
Thank you. Aww. Thank you so much.
I was being a cheeky chappy.
Oh, you cheeky chappy, you. Cool. We're out of here. But before we go, I just want you to know that we love you very much.
Bye.